Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hello, everyone. This is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, coming to you live from Summer NAMM here in Nashville, Tennessee, in our Facebook Live with our great partners at InterTalk Radio and at the NAMM Foundation. This is our Talking Up Music Education podcast, where we're honored and privileged to chat with musicians, music teachers, music students, people who love and believe in music and music education. And I am so thrilled to have Aaron Smith, better known as A-Train.
The How did A-Train.
That happen? How did the A-Train happen from Aaron Smith?
Well,
percussionist, by the way.
Yeah, I played in a band called the 77s, and we did a live album, and I had a drum solo in this one song every night. And this one night, the lead singer introduced me as the A-Train on percussion,
and it stuck. Well, you know, I think it means that people really like you when they give you a nickname.
You're right, they do.
Think of that.
Right. It's a warm fuzzy.
And you're going to stay with it. If someone likes you that much,
that's right.
Keep reminded, right?
I know. I had to get used to it, though.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was a period of time where I hadn't heard that in a long time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then when people started, especially when Facebook started, and people would refer to me as the A-Train. I was like,
the handle I'm want? The handle I've been given. The universe has given me this handle.
Right.
But is it?
Right? How did they know?
Right. That's great. Well, you know, for all of our podcasts, we start with really, we have one really serious format, and then we go all sorts of directions.
Yeah.
But we want to know the origin stories.
Okay.
Your music making origin stories, especially going back to early training and, you know, if there were influential teachers and mm-hmm. opportunities and school-based stuff. Mm-hmm. So what's your origin story?
Well, I'm an only child, and my mother was the only other musician in the family. She sang first chair soprano at our church from age 17 to 82.
Wow.
And
amazing.
Yeah. And so I had to accompany her to choir rehearsals once a week and, of course, church service on Sunday. So I got a love for music from her.
Did you fall asleep, though, while she was rehearsing sometimes?
No, I didn't.
You never in the pew? You never just go to...
No, I didn't.
I had a mother. We had the same mother. My mother was in the choir, director of the choir, and I had to go to all the...
Yeah.
And every now and then, I just had to lay down in a pew.
I could have, though, because I was sitting in the dark because the only lights that were on were on the choir.
Sometimes you just kind of just have to lay down.
Yeah, I probably did.
Right.
I don't remember. I went to sleep.
Yeah.
But our choir director was the band director at high school.
Oh, wow.
And he played in an R&B band in my hometown, which is Durham, North Carolina.
Mm.
And it's two saxophonists in a rhythm section, keyboards, bass, drums, guitar. And the other saxophonist was the band director for the junior high school.
Oh, my goodness.
So
you got luck here.
Yeah.
Luck rolled into one. That's great.
And so you couldn't get into the band until the sixth grade. So my mom talked to the choir director. He encouraged her to let me join the band. And for some reason, she wanted me to play drums. You know, I never asked her about that, but that's what she was interested in, me playing drums. So sixth grade, we have band like three times a week.
Mm, pretty good.
And we're in the school cafeteria.
Yeah.
And everybody's
normal, typical.
Everybody's learning how to play their instrument.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
So the drummers could only play on Friday. because we played on the wooden tables.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have an instrument. And we had the Beldwin Band Builder, book mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. I think that thing has more rest in it than quarter notes, you know? So that's how we started. And it was about 25 drummers when we first started.
Oh,
when
goodness.
We ended, it was four.
Because that's a lot of waiting.
It's a lot of waiting.
A lot of waiting to play. You know, like in count, you know, there's four beats in a measure, usually at that age.
Right.
And, you know, you can say two, four, two, two, three, four, three through three, four, four through two, right? And only so long.
You're waiting.
Right. Only so long.
And you're playing on a table.
Yeah.
So from there, I went to the seventh grade, and my mom asked Dr. Mitchell was his name, how's he doing?
Really good for a table.
Yeah, really. He's
really
great
yeah.
on the table. He said, well, get him a drum. So my dad went to a pawn shop and got me a snare drum. And I played that snare drum throughout junior high school. And I came out of my shell in junior high school because of that drum. Mm. We had to, we would march around the baseball diamond that was near the junior high school every day for band practice. And the drummers would slow down. And Mr. Edgerton, the junior high director, well, nobody wants you to slow down, right, when you're marching. And so I was the only one that would keep up. So he put me in the head of the line and had everybody follow me around the field. And that was my debutante sort of
right.
coming out.
Front
you know?
Line, you
yeah,
were,
I
right.
had friends after that.
Yeah,
I was social after that.
So you hear, you know, first of all, you know, like the all the magic ingredients were there, church.
Mm-hmm.
When we think so many people emerge out of a musical life. Because there was this sometimes there was a church moment there.
Right. Right.
I mean, we know the music in the church is, especially like in a place like North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, there are just vibrant, and even in our urban areas now with, you know, church choirs and church bands
right.
and, you know,
and worship teams.
Worship teams.
So.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's a really vibrant musical place, and a mother who cared, and, you know, if you could play on a table for a year, you might get a drum. I
right.
bet that was, right.
Somebody, a reward.
Right. And then and obviously it was available in school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It wasn't, sure was far from perfect with those, you know, after, you know, tables and, but, you know, a lot of what we care about at the NAMP Foundation is making sure that what you had opportunity for, what I had the opportunity for, is that every kid has
yes.
at least some pathway.
Right.
Because it might not be in church. It might not be at home.
Mm-hmm.
But as that it's available in school.
Yeah. That's very important because.
So it was really your start, right?
Yeah.
I mean, once you led the band around the baseball field, that you were hooked.
I was done.
It was your thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And everybody was hooked on me.
And that was part of it,
yeah.
right?
And from there, and then the exposure to music, you know, to the marches, and then we had a concert band, and it was exposure to that kind of music, that genre of high school concert band renditions of many great pieces. You know, they would they had ways of arranging that made it. A little simpler to play.
Sounds like you had a couple of really good instrumental music teachers.
I did.
With that diversity of repertoire, and mm-hmm. they were very deliberate about it,
mm-hmm.
and a good curriculum.
Very. And we attended a lot of festivals and contests. I played timpani in concert band. I was a drum captain in marching band. And I went on from there to Clark College. Clark College wanted to start an all-male, high-stepping band like Florida mm-hmm. A&M.
Is Clark College an HBCU?
Yes. It's in Atlanta.
Terrific.
Right across
yeah.
the street from Morehouse.
Okay.
And I went down there with my best friend, who was a French horn player and drum major. And I think we had about 35, 40 guys in the band. And it was the first year for the program, so it was it wasn't fully supported or, you know, materially.
It was developing.
Yeah. So that was quite an experience as well.
Building something too.
Mm-hmm.
So you went to college, you graduated college?
No, I didn't. No,
but you went to college and got some more experience.
Yes.
And learned. Mm-hmm. And then when did the set drumming and the, you know, all the pop music and...
Well, that actually came in high school.
Okay.
Yeah. My band director, Mr. Mitchell, said I should play in the... He wanted to put together a jazz band. It never materialized, but there was a drum set there. And I started working in the band with both my music teachers. They were like my chaperone. Mm. And that was a great experience because here were two mentors, two guys I really looked up to. And not only was I seeing them in school, but I'd see them on the weekend.
They put you in the band.
Yeah, they put me in the band.
Yeah.
It was great.
Wow, that's fun. And then a little bit of stint in college, you got the chops together. Mm-hmm. And then what'd you do? What was the next step?
Next step was... I got a job playing with a Motown artist, Chuck Jackson. He had a hit called Any Day Now. And I toured, we played what they call the Chitlin Circuit.
I know what that is.
Up and down the East Coast.
It's part of the popular music history.
Yeah.
It's got a big chapter on the Chitlin Circuit.
Yeah, it does. And I did that. And one of the dates was... in Detroit, Michigan, at a club called the 20 Grand Club. It was a very famous R&B club. A lot of Motown acts have done live records there. And this producer at Motown, Mr. Norman Whitfield, came to the show, heard me play, and offered me a job at Motown, which I accepted.
Which, yeah. it's like...
But before I could start, I got drafted.
Oh, boy.
You know, this is 1971.
I was going to say, right in the Vietnam era.
Yeah.
Right.
So I went in the Army. You know, we didn't have like cell phones, you know, Facebook and all that sort of stuff. You know, you just had the landline phone.
Mm-hmm.
So when I left home, if he was calling my house, he wasn't getting an answer because my mom was at work during the day. And you didn't have an answering machine or anything like that.
Right.
So I managed to get out of the Army because of I was allergic to the detergents that they used to wash the uniforms.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
No one has ever, we never knew that was happening also. Really.
Yeah, yeah. And
you were just so irritated every time you
just irritated my skin. And I went to the company area doctor and he said, well, you can stay in the Army and we'll give you medication for the rest of your life, or you can get out. So I got out. You know, I wasn't really prepared to get out. I was kind of looking forward to staying in by that time. I only had two more weeks of basic training.
Mm-hmm.
But he was so, it was just his demeanor about it that for some reason I thought getting out would be the better thing.
Mm-hmm.
Went back home, got my job back with Chuck Jackson. We went back to the 20 grand. Norman comes to the show and he goes, where have you been?
Oh, my goodness. That, wow. And how long between the first meeting and the second meeting?
It had been about 5 months.
5 months.
Yeah.
Almost a half a year.
Yeah.
That's quite something.
Yeah.
He was trying to reach you. And,
yeah.
Right? Meanwhile, so I went to the Army, right?
Right. That's right.
And I got
you couldn't believe it.
And I got like, a skin
what?
Condition, right?
Right, right. I said, yeah, man, I've been like in Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Right.
And he's going, what?
Yeah, right. So you then, Motown picked you up. Your discography and who you played with is just massive.
Hmm.
Right. I mean, you had serious run, and you're still having a serious run.
Yes,
right.
Yes, I am.
So I chat with someone like you, and there's not a lot like you, but then they're having this serious run, and they work hard at it. You worked hard at it, and you obviously had talent. You had some basics covered in your early childhood, and all this things, and you had a supportive mother and community, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of great that you didn't have to go to Vietnam or do active duty.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was a blessing.
In hindsight. Yeah,
right?
It's great.
So the best way for me to ask this question is share with us the highlights of this last 30 or 30 plus years that you've been moving around this network of, you know, the kind of the names of this millennial period. I mean, of the temptations and, you know, I mean, I'm going to let you name the groups because there are a lot, and the artists. And so it's kind of, you know, what was the highlights? Is it, I can't believe I get to do this, or this was challenged, but I overcame it. You know, I mean, this is the things that in an accomplished career, what stands out for you?
Well, one thing that really stands out to me and has kind of made the difference is that I studied privately with Alan Dawson. He's a great jazz drummer in Boston. He played with Dave Brubeck and a lot of other people. And when I started studying, I wasn't that disciplined. And I maybe had about 3 lessons with him before he pulled me aside. And I was telling this story yesterday. He had this binder notebook, and he said, "Come over here, Smith, sit with me." And he flipped through all the pages in the notebook, and they were all covered. And he said, "Every one of these guys in this book is waiting for your spot." And that did it. You know, from that point on, I practiced like crazy. I still practice. I still practice to this day.
10,000 hours.
Yeah.
The 90,000 hours like I did in school to catch up with all the people that only needed to do 10.
Right.
I needed to do 90.
Right. When they say, you know, talent is one thing, but talent is very overrated.
It's, yeah, 1% talent, 99% hard work.
Yeah, you got to put in the work. Yeah. So that exposure to him really changed my life. You know, because up to that point, I was just going by instinct, you know, and going along with things as they
Which
came.
Which is pretty good.
Well,
it got you noticed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I ran into Miroslav Vitus, who's the bassist from Czechoslovakia. He was the original bass player with Weather Report. And he was very inspirational as well. I did a stint with him. I moved to Sacramento. Well, I moved to San Francisco first, and I start working with this punk rock group called Romeo Void. From Romeo Void, I moved up to Sacramento and did session work at Exit Records as a studio musician. I did that for a couple of years, and during that course of time, I played with, I joined one of the bands there at Exit Records called the 77s. We were a Christian rock band. I was in the 77s for about 10 years.
Terrific.
Yeah.
It was a good run.
It was.
An unusual run.
Unusual.
Yeah.
The last 2 years were kind of weird, but I was still there for recording and some touring. Mm-hmm. I moved to Nashville, and I toured with Rich Mullins, Michael W. Smith, Charlie Peacock, did numerous records when the studio scene was really happening here. And now I am playing with Kevin Max, who is a member of the contemporary Christian group DC Talk.
Mm. Yeah. So it goes on. It goes on.
Yeah, it still goes on. Oh, yeah. And I volunteered the Jazz Workshop, which is an educational place here in Nashville where you can learn all things jazz, you know, any instrument, vocalist. I support a vocal instructor, Connie Florence. And we have a great rhythm section trio that supports her and is people who want to learn how to sing jazz.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah. They have a great professional rhythm section, you know, and it may be their first time.
Do you have an adult program?
Yes.
Can I come and yeah. do a residency? And, oh, don't wouldn't we all dream to, you know, there's two things I would probably train in is to play jazz guitar. you know, perfect. Would you? Oh, just the versatility that you hear on jazz guitar. And the mm-hmm. other thing is to, you know, is to sing with a jazz trio or sing mm-hmm. with a,
yeah.
You know. Yeah. I mean, we all have sort of fantasies, right? Yeah. Musical fantasies. Yeah.
I can't sing, so.
Yeah.
But I understand it. So as a drummer, I approach it that way.
So, what advice would you have? You know, we work with a lot of young people, a lot of college music students who come to the NAMM show mm-hmm. and their faculty, and work with a lot of young people that are aspiring for a creative life in music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. They would say, "Oh, to be able to do that and that and that, and go on the road with, and you know, what kind of advice would you share?" As someone who's lived the life, still living the life mm-hmm. of a professional musician,
mm-hmm.
what are the essentials?
The essentials are technique, a vocabulary, musical vocabulary, as diverse as possible,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then you kind of have to set your sight on what you want to do.
But you got to have the chops.
You got to have chops.
You got to have chops.
The technique is vital.
Just you got to have
no way around it.
And if you don't, like your teacher said,
that's right.
Right. There's a lot of people working hard to have. Right.
They're on the freeway right now, coming to town every day.
Right.
You know, they're waiting tables, waiting for that opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to have technique, vocabulary. Great personality helps.
Which includes like the work ethic, right?
Yeah.
The humble, the humility.
Right.
Willing to say, you know, the flexibility.
Exactly.
You're there to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sacrifice, being willing to sacrifice mm-hmm. in numerous ways. And just dedication to the art.
Loving it.
Loving it.
No matter what.
Yeah. Because if you love it, you're going to do it. And it's not something to be toyed with, really, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So I think musicians have a very precious gift, you know, because it goes out to people who may not be musically gifted or talented or have that interest, but it does something to their lives, you know, because a piece of music can transform you back to a moment. Make a moment that's really special that you can always go back to and really affect your own personal well-being. When two people get together, they have a favorite song, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So mm-hmm. musicians have a really important part to play in just humankind and in helping us to be more human and loving and
that's beautifully said. That's really thank you for sharing mm-hmm. it that way. How many days of the year are you on the road now?
Not that many. I got
thank goodness, right?
Yeah,
we should say,
right.
Ed, thank goodness,
right? Ed, thank goodness. I have a beautiful wife, I love staying home with her. I have some dates this summer where I'm going to be gone. And later on this year.
Is it kind of the road touring, like been there, done that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did it well.
Yeah, I did it well. Yeah. You know, it was fun. I was just talking to a friend of mine at one of the exhibits, and he's got like 150 dates to do this year, and he's not looking forward to it.
It happens, I think.
Yeah.
And then I think that's the time for that. It's a little bit of introspection.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing I would tell people, aspiring musicians, that while you're doing it, make preservation for the future, for sustenance and security of some sort. If you're making money, make some provision for your future because it's not going to last. It never does. You know, it's not.
You may think it's going to.
Yeah, you may think so.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
Or you never want it to end.
Right. It's like when we're young, we think we're going to live forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, a little private story of my own as a classical musician playing, you know, in orchestra pits and things like that, not on Broadway, but in, you know, various events. And really, it was so interesting. That I my whole life was headed in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of hitting in my early 30s, I remember one night so distinctly sitting on the stage with the orchestra, looking out at the audience, and I said, you know, I really want to be out there.
Really?
Because it was, and it was because they'd all had a little dinner together, mm-hmm. and they were settling into their seats to be basically entertained, and mm-hmm. I was the entertainment.
Yeah.
And I kind of went, you know, this has been wonderful. I did it to the absolute nth degree uh-huh. of my ability. But, and I also was beginning to be surrounded by, maybe they were always there, but the musicians I was playing with were not as positive as they were when I started in that world. Mm. They were starting to, you know, it was becoming routine.
Yeah.
And I really kind of felt that I loved music so much, and it was such an source of inspiration to me, and mm-hmm. my standards for it were very high for mm-hmm. myself,
yeah.
that I kind of took a break. Because it was like that moment of introspection, and yeah. I started doing other things, and you know. But
do you ever pull out your flute every
well,
now and then?
I did for a long time, and then I play the piano or the Great American Songbook, less with the jazz part of it,
mm-hmm.
and I sing very loudly.
Good.
So I have this vision of people walking by my house on the way back from the train from New York, and then I'm sitting and I'm singing very loudly and playing the piano, and they're like, what is going on in that house? And I'm singing very loudly.
Yeah, that's great.
So, and you know, I'm learning the ukulele online, and mm-hmm. It may be something I do someday, but... Mm-hmm. But it's all good, you know?
Yeah, it's all good.
And I transferred that passion into this work, which is telling the story and promoting music education and advocating for it. And, you know, I'm able to keep, it's more passionate work than I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So it can translate, but that's such an important message that you're sharing with everyone. Yeah.
Well, you're still, I mean, you're having an influence
yeah,
in music.
I'm proud of that.
And preservation, and
the promotion of it. And I want kids to have the chance I had,
mm-hmm.
the chance you had.
Mm-hmm.
We're working for the chance that we had.
Right.
And so the next generation of kids, whoever they are, that they can express their culture, they can express their identity.
Mm-hmm.
They can express their shared community, you know.
Right.
You know, and there's, we just have to keep working on it. So,
yeah.
Any final thoughts to share?
Being
here at Summer NAMM and being surrounded by friends, old and new.
Yeah,
and,
you know, I had a feeling the other day. It's like for years I could never get in a NAMM show because I didn't have any sponsorships.
Well,
and now I've been to two. I went to Winter NAMM, and here I am at Summer NAMM, and here I am with you. You know, it's like God works in mysterious ways.
Well, and now you're a podcast episode guest. You can always come to a NAMM show. You just let us know.
Yeah, thanks to InterTalk Radio.
InterTalk Radio,
guys.
Our good friends there, sitting behind there, working their magic with technology. We should interview them sometime.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of questions I could ask them. All right, I'm here with the A-Train, a.k.a. Aaron Smith, percussionist, drummer, musician extraordinary, man of spiritual, soulful depth and inspiration, loves his wife. I love a man who says how much he wants to stay home with his wife. You got to love a man who says that out loud and let the world know. Gentlemen, this is a man to emulate.
It's true.
It's just terrific. So thank you all for joining us for this episode of Talking at Music Education with the A-Train, Aaron Smith. Thanks for joining us. Talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. NAMM.